Chapter 16. The Root of the Tree. In this chapter, space-time foam and its effects. What strings do as they shrink? The possibility of a fractal space. Making relativity extra special. All candidate quantum theories of gravity say the tree of physics has a root, a limit to how small things can possibly be. And whenever someone sets a limit, the first thing people want to do is test it. So what happens if you try to make something even smaller? Space and time become elusive concepts, and the very notion of smaller loses meaning. Swallowing its tail. In Chapter 6, I mentioned the 1957 film The Incredible Shrinking Man and commented that if the studio had made a sequel, the hapless protagonist would have confronted adventures far more mind-blowing than dueling with a spider. He might have plucked strings, and I don't mean guitar strings, rambled through extra dimensions, and watched quantum particles make up their minds about which way to go. But not even the most inventive screenwriter and FX team could have kept the franchise going past Episode 3, Revenge of Gravity. According to all proposed quantum theories of gravity, our hero could only shrink to a certain minimum size. At first, as he shrinks from his normal size, gravity fades away. The little man floats in the air like a dust mote, and forces such as electromagnetism dominate his struggle for survival. But as he reaches sub-subatomic proportions, gravity reappears. For instance, consider what it takes just to see him. You need to use photons of ever shorter wavelength to illuminate him. Shorter wavelengths mean higher energy, and if the energy is high enough, photons do more than exert an electromagnetic force. They also exert a noticeable gravitational force and contort the very things they seek to reveal, offsetting the higher resolution provided by the shorter wavelength. The image of our hero starts to look like one in a funhouse mirror, and shorter wavelengths of light only worsen the distortion. At a certain point, the gravitational effect becomes dominant. Continuing to increase the energy then becomes counterproductive because it only reduces the resolution of the image. The minimum possible distance you can resolve is the Planck scale of 10 to the negative 35th meter, or a bit greater once you account for the gravity exerted by the measurement apparatus too. If the shrinking man manages to reach this size intact, he becomes the invisible man as well. He can't even make out his own hand. That's the least of his worries. At fine scales, the quantum fields all around him fluctuate so tumultuously that their gravity becomes a force to be reckoned with. Tiny black holes form and pop like soap bubbles. The fluctuations might rip the space-time fabric and create wormholes, in which case space-time ceases to be a static continuum and becomes a bubbling froth of interconnections called space-time foam. The concept of being at a specific location loses meaning as our hero gets lost in black holes or slips into wormholes and rides through them like a roller coaster. Definition. Space-time foam is the hypothesized frothy behavior of space-time on the smallest scales, caused by quantum fluctuations of the gravitational field. In these ways, the Planck length acts like the smallest possible tick mark on a ruler. You can't locate an object with any greater precision than that. Gravity sculpts the universe not just on its largest scales, but also on the very smallest ones. To depict this dual role, physicists Sheldon Glashow and Joel Primack have adopted the metaphor of the Ouroboros, a classical mythological symbol of a snake eating its own tail. Quantum leap. The cosmic Ouroboros shows the vast range of size scales in nature, spanning over 60 orders of magnitude, from the smallest conceivable distance, the Planck scale, to the largest observable distance, the radius of our universe. We humans are nearly in the middle. To be precise, the center is closer to a paramecium, but calling a paramecium the center of the universe sounds like a Gary Larson cartoon. That's no coincidence. We're big enough that quantum effects don't make our lives unpredictably random, and small enough that gravity doesn't crush all our intricacy. The observable cosmos has to be as big as it is, so it could have cooled enough for complex structures to form. String theory adds some new twists as it reveals other connections between the small and the large. The photons you use to illuminate the shrinking man are actually little strings, and as their energy increases, their intrinsic size, typically estimated to be 10 to the negative 34th meter, becomes a factor even before gravity does. The strings distend and become less able to pick up fine features. Eventually, increasing their energy starts to reduce the resolution of your image. You reach a boomerang point where you think you're probing shorter distances, but actually are probing longer distances again. The snake doesn't so much eat its own tail as fold back on itself. If you prefer an arboreal theme, the tree of physics flips upside down like the Hindu banyan tree that has its roots in the heavens and its branches in the ground. The ability of short distances to act like long ones is surprising, because the infinitesimal and the infinite don't normally have much to do with each other. Yet unification is all about making connections where you never thought there would be any. Alternatives to string theory likewise predict that our notions of space-time break up on small scales. The ways theories handle the roots of the tree of physics is one thing that distinguishes them and might make them experimentally testable. Anytime particles or strings are pushed together cheek by jowl, as they are within black holes and early in cosmic history, the fine structure of space-time can have big consequences. Living off the grid. A minimum distance suggests that space-time has some kind of cellular structure. Might it be a regularly spaced grid like a chessboard? In that case, you could no sooner exist in the blank space between grid points than a chess piece could sit halfway between two squares. The smallest meaningful distance is the distance between adjacent points. Unfortunately, such a grid is hard to square with Einstein's special theory of relativity. According to this theory, people moving at different speeds perceive distances differently, so only some of them would see the grid as regularly spaced. Their viewpoint would be singled out as uniquely valid, as if the universe had been built specially for them. Apart from the unfairness of it all, privileging one viewpoint could allow some people to see an effect precede its cause. That might not be such a bad thing if the violation became apparent only on fine scales, but any violation should be amplified by distance. It would take a new principle, yet to be discovered, to isolate a failure of relativity on small scales from its undeniable success on large ones. Some physicists have sought such a principle, as I discuss later, but most think special relativity holds all the way down. That demands a more subtle view of space-time than a grid of points. Dueling points of view. String theory is nothing if not subtle. In it, the shortest distance is not a property of space-time per se, but of the strings that propagate within it. The processes that govern strings are defined not in ordinary space-time, but in the inner space of the string. When you ask what the string does in the external space-time, some useful ambiguity arises. Two entirely separate modes of behavior can be outwardly equivalent or dual. Dualities are the physics version of optical illusions that consist of one image with two interpretations, a vase or two faces, a cube oriented down and to the right or up and to the left, a saxophone player in profile or a woman's face. Both ways of viewing these images are equally valid. Definition: a duality is a relationship between two situations that look utterly different yet are actually equivalent. Dualities crop up all over physics. For example, electric fields and magnetic fields are dual. In many situations, you can ascribe an electrical effect to a magnetic field and vice versa without changing a thing. String theory is a veritable jungle of dualities. Many of them cause short distances to masquerade as long ones and vice versa. In one case, a closed string trudging a long distance looks like a pair of open strings navigating a short distance. When viewed in space-time, both situations sweep out the same tube. The only difference between them is what you call space and what you call time. If time runs lengthwise, you have a closed string moving along distance. If time runs around the circumference, you have a balanced pair of open strings coming into existence, moving a short distance, and then canceling each other out. According to special relativity, these two interpretations are equivalent. Another duality, known as T-duality, involves the size of the space that strings move in. For the sake of argument, imagine that space has a cylindrical shape and that the string glides around the circumference. If the circumference is large, the string barely notices it's on a cylinder at all. By giving it a push, you can send it off at pretty much any velocity you like. Definition: T-duality is the equivalence between a small extra dimension and a large one. If the cylinder is narrow, the limited room for maneuver affects the string's motion. Quantum theory describes its motion in terms of a wave, the wavelength of which encodes the string's momentum. By restricting the wavelength, the cylinder size restricts the velocity. The string becomes like a car with a malfunctioning cruise control that only lets you set the speed in increments of, say, 8 miles per hour. You can make it go 64 miles per hour or 72 miles per hour, but not 65 miles per hour. The smaller the circumference, the bigger the increment becomes. Just as its motion is becoming constricted, the string gains the freedom to behave in a peculiarly stringy way, wrapping itself around the cylinder like a rubber band around a rolled-up poster. A rubber band wrapped around a poster multiple times stores a lot of elastic energy. The same goes for a string wrapped around a cylindrical space multiple times. One difference is that you don't have to pull the string off the end of the cylinder to add a winding. It breaks and reconnects to form the loop. For a large circumference, adding a winding represents a huge step up in energy. For a small circumference, it's just a small step. That's exactly the opposite trend from motion. For large cylinders, it takes less energy to accelerate than to wrap, but for small ones, it takes less energy to wrap than to accelerate. Those of us watching the string can tell only what its overall energy is. We don't know whether the energy represents motion, winding, or vibration, which is insensitive to the size of space. We can't distinguish between a closed string moving around a large cylinder and a closed string wrapping around a small cylinder. This ambiguity arises not just for closed strings moving around a cylinder, but also for closed and open strings in other settings. The crossover point, where motion and wrapping are equivalent, is perhaps 10 to the negative 34th power meter. To an outside observer, this represents the minimum size of space and therefore of the string that resides in it. The transition from motion to wrapping occurs gradually, which avoids the contradictions of a grid-like space. Instead of a chessboard, space looks more like a watercolor painting where the brush strokes bleed together. Is anything smaller than strings? But what about the gap between the minimum string size and the Planck scale of 10 to the negative 35th power meter? Those shorter distances fall between the cracks of strings, yet theorists think they still exist. To probe them, you can turn to zero brains, the exotic particles mentioned in Chapter 12. These zero brains anchor the ends of strings but can do things on their own and might even be the driving force for string behavior. They are so heavy they can probe short distances without getting distended. Quantum leap. Some researchers argue that strings ultimately consist of space-time foam. They may be like rivers that look like smooth currents from afar, but are burbling brooks up close. On these scales, the standard way of describing positions using one coordinate for each dimension, such as latitude and longitude in 2D, is hopelessly crude. Instead, it takes a whole array of numbers. These arrays specify the distance between every zero brain and every other zero brain, like one of those mileage charts in a road atlas. In principle, you could sit down with a mileage chart and work out where the cities must be located to account for the distances between them, but in the microscopic world, an array of distances may not be so easily reduced to points with definite locations. If you insist on using standard coordinates, some information gets lost. The more precisely you know the longitude, the less precisely you know the latitude, and vice versa. The coordinates aren't fully independent of one another. This trade-off is known as non-commutative geometry. Some researchers have even sought to use it as the basis of a fundamental theory independent of string theory. Definition: in non-commutative geometry, the coordinates of points aren't fully independent of one another. Combined with the trade-offs of standard quantum theory, non-commutative geometry predicts that a fast-moving string oozes out in the direction perpendicular to its motion. For example, suppose your cat is sprinting down the hall at a high but uncertain speed. According to quantum theory, you may not know her speed, but at least you know where she is. Bringing in non-commutative geometry, the well-defined position in the direction of her motion corresponds to a spread of her lateral position. A high-energy cat seems to fluff out. Loops, trees, and sprinkles. The leading alternatives to string theory predict different ways that nature can have a smallest scale while respecting special relativity. Loop gravity. According to this theory, lengths, areas, and volumes come in discrete chunks the size of the Planck scale, the atoms of space. If you try to probe shorter distances by creating higher energy photons, space itself resists you. Gravity, normally an attractive force, becomes repulsive and pushes out the excess energy. Although these atoms are interconnected like a grid, it is no ordinary grid. By the dictum that everything not forbidden is compulsory, space is, in all its possible configurations, at once. We don't directly see this geometrical goulash. All we see is the average of the myriad possibilities. People moving at different speeds take different averages, but still perceive the space atoms to have the same size. So the laws of physics work the same for all, in keeping with the principle of relativity. Bucky space. Although proponents of this technique envision space-time as a framework like a geodesic dome, that's just an approximation that lets them simulate it on a computer. As with loop gravity, the observed shape is a smooth quantum average. The computer simulations have reached two interesting conclusions. First, you need to wire in special relativity at the microscopic level, as in string theory. Otherwise, the goulash of possible geometries never boils down to the four dimensions we know and love. Second, space-time totally changes in character on short distances. It shades from a 4D continuum into a 2D fractal. Coastlines, trees, and Jackson Pollock paintings are examples of fractals. Each little piece of one looks much like the whole thing. The distinction between scales fades away. Things smaller than the Planck scale merely reproduce, in miniature, the Planck scale. Space doesn't boomerang on itself so much as stutter. Definition: a fractal is a geometric figure built from a shape that repeats on multiple scales. Causal sets. This technique starts from the premise that space-time is a grid, just not a regular one. Points are sprinkled at random distances from one another, which ensures that no observer's viewpoint is truer than any other's. Their average spacing is the Planck length. The points are so dense that variations in their spacing are all but undetectable. They interconnect to ensure that cause always precedes effect, in accordance with relativity. Does relativity fail? However weird the preceding ideas may be, you can take comfort from the perseverance of special relativity. It vindicates some of your basic intuitions about, for example, cause-effect relations. If you see A cause B, I do too, no matter how fast I'm moving or how small I am. That way, we can come to some reasonable agreement about how the world works. Some physicists, though, don't think even that's the case. They suspect that special relativity either breaks down or takes on a new form in the micro world. Giving up special relativity would so drastically change the character of string theory that most physicists wouldn't even call it string theory anymore. It would take away most or all of the extra dimensions of space, which were hypothesized to keep special relativity happy. Good riddance, say proponents of this approach, known for technical reasons as Liouville strings. They see those dimensions as an unnecessary complication. In return, however, they must assume space-time foam behaves in an irreducibly random way. For better or worse, this anarchy violates the principle of determinism. Everything that happens, happens for a reason. Another idea merely tinkers with special relativity. A central feature of relativity is the universal speed limit, namely the speed of light. It's universal because everybody sees light moving at the same speed, no matter what his own rate of motion is. It's a speed limit because if you try to accelerate a spaceship from sublight to light speed, you fail. As you approach light speed, your efforts to accelerate achieve diminishing returns. Reaching light speed would require infinite energy. Maybe the Planck scale plays a similar role. It could be a universal length or energy limit. Although relativity normally says that people moving at different speeds perceive distances differently, maybe this doesn't hold true for a Planck-length object. If one person measures an object to be the Planck length in size, then everyone will. If you try to accelerate an elementary particle to the Planck energy, you fail. As you approach the limit, your efforts to accelerate achieve diminishing returns. Some physicists have tweaked relativity to include this second limit, creating doubly special relativity, or deformed special relativity. In two-dimensional space, loop quantum gravity predicts just such an effect. Theorists debate whether it happens in 3D, though. Definition: doubly or deformed special relativity is a modified form of Einstein's special theory of relativity that adds a second limit in addition to the speed of light. These proposals are controversial but have the virtue of making distinct observational predictions. Special relativity would begin to make erroneous predictions at very high energies, as either the randomness or the universal energy limit made itself felt. Most prominently, the speed of light wouldn't be the constant that Einstein took it to be. High-energy photons might travel more slowly or quickly, depending on the specific theory. Having such a short wavelength, these photons are more sensitive to the space-time foam, just as a small speedboat is buffeted by ocean waves more strongly than a supertanker is. For our shrinking man, this would have some dramatic consequences. Space would become a prism, splaying light into a rainbow. The smallifying machine would have to apply increasing amounts of energy to shrink him, and his ordeal might finally come to an end. The least you need to know. There's a limit to how small things can be, as if space-time had some kind of cellular structure. String theory suggests that microscopic space is like a watercolor painting where brushstrokes bleed into one another. Loop gravity suggests it's a quantum stew of possibilities, and the Bucky space theory suggests it's a fractal. In some approaches, the speed of light might change at very high energies and small scales.